Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the 10th United We Stand podcast of the season. My name's Andy Mitten, and I'm delighted to welcome our special guest today, Jimmy Greenough. Jimmy is 66 years young. He's a Barnsley lad from South Yorkshire, and he had a very successful football career, first as a youth player at Leeds United. Then he played for Leeds when he had a great side in the 60s. Then he moved to Birmingham City, played nearly 300 games for Stoke City, who were, of course, the visitors to Old Trafford on Saturday. And then he joined Manchester United in 1976, linking up with his brother. Jimmy was 30 when he went to Old Trafford and stayed for 4 years. Had some great moments at Old Trafford before winding down his career at Crewe, Toronto, Blizzard, Port Vale and Rochdale. Welcome, Jimmy.
Hi, Andy.
What are you up to these days?
Just done shopping again with the wife.
Apart from shopping, what else are you doing?
Well, I do a little bit of golf, trying to do a little bit of golf.
What do you play off?
I used to be quite low, but now I'm off 18, so it's becoming harder, put it that way, Andy.
Didn't you used to invite Sir Matt Busby down to the golf course near where you live?
He came down, he did, when we had... What happened, man, when I was at Stoke, I was asked by the guys who owned the club that could I get Man United to open it. So obviously rang our Brian and he got a few of the players to come. Stoke was also going to open it with them, and they happened to, as they usually do, organised a trip at the last moment, on the last day. So the lads from Stoke came on the Sunday night, but the lads from Manchester United opened it by playing the members.
Right.
And met Sir Matt Busby with one of those.
Was he a decent golfer, Sir Matt?
He loved his golf. He was very much appreciated that he came.
You stayed living in the Stoke area, even when you moved up to United, and you were very well thought of in the area and still are. You still watch Stoke? I know you still watch United.
I watch Stoke when United are away.
Yeah.
Last season was kind of a good time because Stoke were away when United were at home and vice versa, apart from obviously when they played one another. So I didn't miss many games down at Stoke, and it was a good experience. It was a different type of football, so it wasn't a case of seeing the same thing week in, week out.
Describe the type of football at Stoke.
Now?
Yeah.
Well, it was more or less kind of Route 1. Mm. Even though at times they were kind of a little bit unfairly labelled that way, because they always played with wingers, named Jermaine Pennant and Matty Edrington.
Mm.
So, but it seemed to get it up to the front too as quickly as possible. And maybe more so as well when Crouchy came. But they're improving, make no mistake about that. It's not all about just the high ball up front anymore.
You've always spoken well of Tony Pulis, the Stoke manager.
Yeah, quite rightly so. No reason not to. He's the only, ever since I've left, he's the only manager that's welcomed me back. And I go on a regular basis to have a bite of lunch down at the training ground.
Really? So in the sort of 30 years since you left, he's the first one who said, come back, you mean a lot to the history of this club, you're always welcome here?
Yep. The other ones kind of seem to not want me there, so but Tony's been wonderful. And his assistant, David Kemp.
Yeah. Were the others threatened by your popularity in Stoke? Because I speak to Stoke fans of a certain generation, and my auntie, who's a Mancunian, married into a family of Stoke fans, and you're a hero for many of them.
Yeah, and I think that's lovely. I still am, but yeah, I think you've hit it on the head there. The popularity kind of wasn't liked by certain managers. If I came to a game, obviously my name was chanted, which I suppose can be a little bit off-putting, but to actually more or less say we don't want you there again wasn't nice.
You were so happy at Stoke that when United came in for you, you didn't want to leave initially, did you?
No, I mean, the crowd were fantastic with me, Andy. Absolutely fantastic. I say on many occasions that they probably made me as a player. I mean, the support to me was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And I was always a player that kind of thrived on a pat on the back rather than a rollicking. And the crowd definitely gave me pats on the back every game.
And they sang your name in the Boothermen.
Every time. I mean, they start chanting it for no reason whatsoever. And yeah, at first I thought this is a bit embarrassing, but no, I got to like it. And the game, well, prospered through it, thrived, should I say, through it.
And what was it like walking through the centre of Stoke when at the height of your fame and popularity there? Would you get mobbed?
Not really. I mean, it's. Didn't get the coverage that it does nowadays, Andy. So, I mean, it was still... I mean, I got noticed, but it wasn't kind of hero worship as much, you know, but it was kind of... Yeah, it was trying to get a natter and you see them staring at you and what have you, but they didn't seem to bother you that much. It was OK.
Now, you played for Stoke when they were a big club in the 70s. And then in the 80s and 90s, they went down and down. And I can remember going to see my auntie perhaps 6 or 7 years ago and her husband coming back from the Britannia Stadium and saying, big crowd today, there were 15,000 there at Stoke. I mean, the club has changed completely since then, hasn't it? Since they've come up from the old third division. Is that down to money being put in by, is it Coates, the chairman? Or is it down to Pulis?
It is the lack of up now many years, obviously in recent years.
Yeah.
It's well definitely been that. But I think also the relationship between Mr. Coates, Peter Coates and Tony is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows if results ever got bad, you know, kind of how they would be then. But at this moment in time, it stands out a mile how they comment about one another and how they get on. And yeah, I mean... Peter Coates has had a massive input into Stoke City getting where they are now. And I mean, the training facilities are absolutely wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
It must be a pleasure to go into training. I mean, it's always a pleasure to go into training. But kind of when I was at Stoke, it was kind of on a dirt track over the behind the pitch. And even though we still kind of didn't let it affect us, and we still... enjoyed the games and what have you, the sessions that they put on. I mean, nowadays it's like going out and training on Wembley every week, every day.
Yeah. I saw that 8 Stoke players won't be training there this week because they're on international duty. That struck me as how far Stoke have come in the last few years.
Yeah, that's good. And there should probably be another one in Crouchy, I mean, because Crouchy is a good player. He's very gangly and all that, but kind of... his record for England is superb, and Stoke City supporters love him. And I think what they do there, they do know a good player when they see one.
Michael Owen, not really had a chance to impress yet. Do you think he'll be a good signing for Stoke?
I hope so. He'll be good for the dressing room anyway, we know that already.
Mm.
I mean, he's such a good lad, and he's been welcomed and fitted in, and he's delighted that he's made that move, and he just felt it was definitely the right move, and probably thanks Tony Pulis for signing him.
And why is he so good in the dressing room? What do the other players like about him? Because I've spoken to Stoke players in the last couple of years and off the record they've told me, oof, you know, there's been issues there with the manager. Players who are no longer at the club, so there's obviously personal issues there.
I think he can have it. Why should there be any bother there at all? Every time I go and see him, he never stops smiling, he speaks to everyone, he brings all the lads into it and what have you.
Yeah.
No one seems to be kind of tittle-tattling behind. Well, they're not tittle-tattling behind. It just looks a happy crew to me.
Yeah.
And I think if you get a bad boy there, I mean, quite rightly, he's got rid of them. No names mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you think Stoke will do at Old Trafford on Saturday? Will they go to Old Trafford expecting anything?
Well, I'm sure they will.
Really?
I think there's so much confidence there, and I think as the years have progressed, that we can. I think the last home game at the Britannia, they were a little bit unlucky, and the last time they went to Old Trafford, I think it was 2-1. I didn't actually see the game. I was laid up in bed, so... But I think the feeling is that they're getting better all the time against the bigger sides, and they'll take some heart from, all right, with Chelsea scored in the last 2 or 3 minutes and getting a draw at Anfield.
Yeah.
So Man City as well came, you know, I mean, so they've always relished the big games of Stoke City, even when I was there.
Yeah.
I don't know why, they just seem to play well against the better sides and struggle against the lesser sides.
Describe the rivalry between Stoke and United, because I can remember catching a train to an away game with United when I was about 17 or 18, and it stopped at Stoke, and a load of Stoke fans came on, and they were sort of rum-looking lads, and they looked around and said, there's a few shit fans on this carriage, and I think that they meant Manchester United fans, and it was completely new to me because I'd never seen Stoke as a rival. But obviously with all the Stoke fans, there is a rival, and you're probably part of the reason for that because you left Stoke to join United.
No, I don't think so. I think any club that Man United play, there's supporters do kind of dislike us. Jealousy, the debate could go on forever with that.
Yeah.
But the rivalry, or the whatever you like to call it, between Stoke at board level, etc., is marvellous. No rivalry. They're absolutely biggest of friends.
Mm.
And that stemmed from... my day with Tony Waddington and Sir Matt Busby being huge friends.
Mm.
And the directors and the director. I mean, Christ, you play that at Manchester United or Sir Manchester United played at Stoke.
Yeah.
And what usually happened in those days, that if Stoke would play Man United, the reserves would be playing one another.
Yeah.
And on many occasions, if, say, you were at Stoke, the Stoke first reserve would be back before the Manchester United first team left the old Victoria Ground.
Yeah.
Because they love one another's company and they like to drink afterwards.
Yeah. So,
the directors get on great.
And didn't Waddington, when he was trying to sell you, sort of break the news and say, look, you know, listen, it's Manchester United here. He spoke of United in almost reverential terms.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And I think it was nice that he kind of thought that as well, that was my place to be. If I wasn't going to be where he wanted me to be, the only place to be was United. And I think, thankfully, at 30 years of age, at least he was getting the chance to play for a great club.
Yeah. Some readers' questions. Peter Boyle, who you might know, sent one in saying... It's not a song, fortunately, so you don't have to hear him sing. But he said, can you ask Jimmy, does he think he joined United at the right time? Or does he wish that he joined us a few years earlier?
I think it was the right time for Tommy Docherty. He kind of looked at his team. He felt he needed one more person, especially up front, an older head. And he kind of gave me a great fillip when I joined. That I heard him speaking to someone and he says, I've done it, I've got the final piece of the jigsaw. And that was nice. A lot of people that supported the United we should have come 10 years earlier.
Mm.
And I jokingly said, but it isn't a joke, where would I go in the team? Who's going to be left out for me? Dennis, the King, Bobby, Georgie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, no, it was probably the right time when it blooded a lot of youngsters.
Mm.
He got Alex Stepney at the back, who was an old head who'd seen it all. Mm. He got a great skipper in Martin Buchan.
Mm.
And then I think he wanted an old head up front to play with Stuart Pearson, and I think he wanted the ball to stick up there a little bit more and bring all the midfielders into it. But these midfielders always get double figures, you know, and they did do.
And what, he encouraged that? He said, get forward.
Oh, God, yeah, I mean, Tommy Docherty would have been happy with 6-5 wins for United every game.
Mm.
He was a great. He wanted to entertain the public so much, and he wanted to play in the Man United way with loads of flair.
Yeah. When I came to see you a couple of years ago as part of the 70s book I wrote, you spoke obviously all about your career, and you spoke about your brother being a very good player. Was it nice to play with him at Old Trafford?
Oh, it was incredible. Mm. I mean, it just was incredible. And, even doing the hospitality now, I mean, people will point out to youngsters, especially who obviously never saw us play, just said, oh, you know, he's one of the first brothers to play for United as such, you know.
Yeah.
And the reaction from the youngsters, really, you know, and it's, they're just kind of educating them along the way. It's not all just about today's game, today's team.
Which other brothers have played? The Buchans, the Nevilles?
The Buchans and the Nevilles and the lads we're in now.
Yeah, the De Silvers.
Twins, yeah.
And there's another one.
Really?
Yeah. I went to Denmark a year ago. To stay with one of them to write a story about him. He's playing in Denmark, and his brother is in Toronto, where he was a few months ago. And the
ginger haired lad.
Correct. Adam was the
ginger. Did they play the first team together though?
Yeah, not together. Adam played one game. Adam Eckersley. And Richard Eckersley played about four matches.
Yeah, they did. Left full back, didn't they?
Yeah, but they never played together.
And I think that people, when they kind of mention that, I think they're going about playing in the first team.
Yeah,
together.
I mean, it's a trick question in some respects, but if you speak to Adam, he's very proud of it, and wouldn't he be?
Why not?
He's played for United. What type of player was your brother?
Well, he's a good player. I mean, he played for England 18 times.
Yeah.
He would die for Man United.
Yeah.
He just loved his environment, just loved playing for Manchester United. Wholehearted, if anyone, if you had to pick anyone to give, gave you 100% or 1% more than anybody else, I think you'd choose Brian.
Yeah. You said when I spoke to you last time you'd not spoke to him. I still don't think you spoke to him. Does that sadden you?
Yes, it does, big time. But I don't go on about that and there's families as if I can, because like my father always said, he says, whatever's in family keeps in house, and I think that's quite right.
Sarno, another reader, said, can you say to Jimmy, thanks for scoring my favourite ever goal? I'm sure you can guess which one that is. Ask him if his missus minded him kissing Joe Jordan.
Oh, God, things you do.
So
things you do when you're happy and you don't realise it. Then you see yourself on TV the day after or whatever, and I'm like, oh, I can't believe I did that. But listen, I'd do it again. If I could turn the clock back and score the winner against Liverpool, semi-final, God almighty,
So
just any better than that.
Explain for the younger listeners who might not remember it. You said Liverpool semi-final. It was at Goodison Park, wasn't it? 1979.
It was a replay, we'd drawn at Main Road 2-2. Hung on for dear life for the last 8 minutes when Liverpool equalised. I think all the supporters and maybe the players as well were a little bit kind of overblown it and a bit round-shouldered and what have you. But anyway, we kicked off and the legs started going again and 12 minutes to go, Mickey Thomas crossed. The ball bounced about 10 yards in front of me, well, to the side of me. God knows what went through my mind. Shall I chest it? Shall I chest it onto my thigh? Shall I hit it? Shall I let it drop a bit more? And all of a sudden, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw Ray Clements make a move outwards towards me, and I lunged forward and scored the goal 12 minutes to go, and longest 12 minutes of my life in football. But even to this day, I know it made a lot of people happy, Andy.
Yeah. Certainly the 20-odd thousand United fans who were there that night. And people watching on TV, I mean, this was the pre-Sky age when there were two cameras in the whole ground.
There was two cameras, you're right, you're spot on.
Well, one of them caught you with a big, big grin on your face.
I turned away and kind of half saluting the supporters, half not knowing what I'm doing, just deleted. And I happened to be kind of running at one point. Directly to a camera, which I didn't know about, obviously, until I saw it on TV the day after. And the pulling of my face, the kissing of Joe Jordan with no front teeth, was something like that would be there in my mind, and I could picture it to this day, obviously.
And is it right the referee told you to calm down, you were so happy?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I was shaking like mad with elation.
Yeah, and adrenaline. It's, when you look back, was that a high point of your career or the high point of your career?
One of them.
Yeah.
One of them. Mm. I mean, I played in semi-finals before at Leeds, at Stoke, FA Cup. When the FA Cup was big, you know.
Yeah.
I think the FA Cup was regarded with players who'd rather be in an FA Cup final than probably win the league. I mean, so...
I mean, people find that strange now, but we had Alex Stepney on as guest 2 or 3 weeks ago, and Alex said the highlight of his career at the time wasn't winning the European Cup; it was the FA Cup. He said that was the big deal.
Well, I was the same. So I never thought I'd get to Wembley. Yeah. Played in the League Cup final twice. The FA Cup was something special, and so, I mean, there's even the semi-final at Hillsborough when we beat Leeds 2-1, and that was to get me to my first FA Cup final. That was special. Obviously, being credited with the winning goal in the 77, that was special. Player of the year at Manchester United, very, very, very special. Picked by his supporters throughout the year. I mean, the Matt Busby Trophy, I mean, It's hard to define which was the greatest. The regarding goals, that one in the Goodison Park takes some beating.
Could you have dreamed of all that when you were growing up as a kid in Barnsley?
Well, you dream about it. Mm. You dream about scoring winning goals in cup final, make no mistake about it. You dream about scoring hat-tricks in cup finals, but that didn't happen. But at least one came true where I scored the winning goal in a cup final.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely dreamt about them, dreamt about a lot of things.
Who were the best players you played with in your career?
Oh, from anywhere.
Yeah.
How many do you want? One, two, or what?
Five.
Oh, five, geez.
Give us a good five. Doesn't have to be a best five, because you might leave somebody out and later regret it.
Well, I will. Oh, gosh. I love Sammy McElroy.
Yeah.
I love Stevie Coppell.
Yeah.
I love Stuart Pearson.
Yeah.
And I've played with some good captains, kind of. Billy Brennan is very high there, but I think I would have to plump for Martin Buchan. I think absolute wonderful captain, great defender, a great captain on the field and off the field as well.
Mm. Very
but
smart.
I'm away from Man United for the best ever, and there's a lad I played with at Stoke. What called Alan Hudson.
Yeah.
He's probably been the best player I ever played with. A lot of people obviously still say he was telepathic, and we just loved it to death. Crossed that line, and we wanted the ball to ourselves. It was lovely. Great player, honestly.
Nobody doubts that Buchan was A, a great player, and B, a great captain. Took it very seriously, always dressed, looked the part. There are some doubts about whether he was a great guitarist or not. What's your opinion?
Yeah. If he wanted to clear a room, get Martin to bring out his guitar, the lads would run a mile.
He says he was good.
A legend in his own mind.
And he took it seriously. Lou Macari printed up false tickets for the Players' Lounge.
That's right.
And Martin was befuddled by this and ran off the pitch at one game to take the tickets, and he couldn't understand why there were more tickets, and it was because Macari had printed counterfeit tickets.
Right.
He was the rascal of the dressing room, was he? That's how Martin described him to me.
Very
a rascal,
so.
A little rascal, is what he
very
said.
Very much so. Very serious when he got on the park.
Yeah.
But off the park, yeah, everything... He had to be doing something mischievous.
And what sort of tricks did you see him doing? Cutting socks up, that was what one he did?
No, just a wind-up merchant, mostly on the fold.
Yeah.
Mostly on the fold. Yeah. Used to wind Gordon Hill up ever, whatever. Never so much, kind of pretending to be someone else and wanted a kind of a little piece, doing like I'm doing now. And,
yeah.
And asking silly questions, and the lads would be in the background, laughing my socks off.
I went to stay with Gordon in Dallas 2 years ago, and his wife Claire, and I think he's still scarred by Macari's tricks to this day. he sort of talks about them of, and you know, he doesn't entirely see the funny side all the time.
No, well, he did get some stick, so yeah. And he handled it quite well. Well, maybe he didn't know what was going on, but like, he knows now, doesn't he, obviously. But we felt at the time he didn't know he was being set up all the time with Lou.
He said, Lou told me that Juventus came to Old Trafford and the Italian journalist played the English journalist at the Cliff, and while they were out playing, Lou sneaked in the dressing room and he cut the end off all the socks of the Italian journalist, and he put all the ends of the socks into a big tea urn, and he said they came back into the dressing room after the game and they were all having cups of tea thinking, this is really traditional, how very English, how very polite of Manchester United. Little did they realise that the end of their socks had made the tea. And they soon realised when they put the socks on, then they pulled them on and they flew right up to the knees because Macari had cut the ends out of all of them. And I think their feelings about Manchester United changed a little bit at that point. And that was Lou. When Ray Wilkins joined, Lou said his shoes were a bit too fancy for my liking, so there was only one solution. And I said, what's that? He said, I just had to nail them to the floor. He said, Wilkins came in, tried to put his new shoes on and he couldn't move them. And Lou's a local lad, isn't he, to you? He lives in Stoke.
It is, it's amazing how people have kind of played for Stoke or whatever and stayed in the area. Mm. You know, Gordon Bankstill lives in the area, you know. It's, and like you say, Lou, Terry Conroy, been here 40-odd years, Harry Burroughs. I mean, just people from outside that have cared, that have come here and stayed here.
Another reader, Jamie Reeman, wants to know, why didn't you take penalties for United?
I did do.
Okay. All the time?
I took them for quite a few years, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't get that many, to be honest.
No.
To be honest, we didn't get that many in my time.
And before you, it was Gerry Daly, I think.
Gerry Daly, he was a good penalty taker. And if you're talking about penalty takers, there is one up at the top.
Yeah.
So Nobody wanted to follow Gerry. I don't know if Sammy Mack took a couple as well. Mm. I don't seem to remember having a lot of penalties. But I know at the end of my time at United, I was the penalty taker.
He also wants to know, who did you support when Barnsley played United a few times in the late 90s?
Oh, God, I think I have to be honest and say Barnsley.
Yeah.
He was even in the reserves. I used to go down and watch the reserves games at Oakwell.
Yeah.
I remember going down once and it was snow. It was covered in snow. And I think United were winning 5-1 half-time and Barnsley beat them 6-5, one of the greatest games I've ever seen.
And that was a reserve game?
That was a reserve game.
And one of the most famous sons of Barnsley was Tommy Taylor.
No, my favourite. He was my idol early on. I mean, as you can call idol, not being very old, and just before he came to United. Mm-hmm. And I was there from Barnsley to United because of Tommy Taylor.
What was he like, Tommy Taylor, as a player? You great, most people listening.
Ball. Absolutely great. That's all I can remember as a youngster.
Yeah.
Great head of the ball, but everybody seemed big as well. He seemed very tall, enormous, 6 foot whatever, 6'12".
Did you ever meet him? Did you ever get his autograph?
No, I was only a young kid.
Didn't you tell me you once used to get in the ground really early at Oakwell?
Always.
Just wait for it to fill up.
First through the turnstile.
And you sat by the dugout?
Stood by the dugout, right next to it.
Yeah. Just stood excited.
The only time I went in the stand is when my dad took me.
Gosh.
And then you pay to go in, and you had to pay again to go into the stand.
Yeah.
And he used to lift me over the turnstile, so... And then probably give the guy a bob or two or a tanner.
So the team's results you look out for then are Manchester United, Stoke City and Barnsley.
Oh, we look out for Barnsley. Man United and Stoke.
And what about Leeds and Birmingham where you played?
No, I'm a little bit fond of Birmingham and you still look for them, but not kind of wanting them... It's not kind of, oh, please win, you know what I mean? Like, I want Barnsley to do well and obviously United, big time, you know, so and City, so, and that's it, the three, there's no more. Birmingham's not too bad, yeah.
What have you made of United so far this season?
I think they've done well once again to stay where they are with the injuries they've had.
Yeah.
Or the injuries they've still got. Yeah. And a lot of people say, oh, they're not playing well, but sign of a good team, you know, when you're not playing well and you still get results. Well, the Everton one was a bad result for us, but still second in the league.
And the injuries are just unfortunate. There's nothing you can do about that.
Well, you can't. I mean, if you get injured in training or whatever, and it happens to be an injury that, I don't know, a metatarsal or a neck or a knee that needs surgery, you can't rush them up. You can't rush them at all. And more so when they're the young lads, you don't want their career to be affected at an early age. All right, you get your 33s or 4s in, you'll give it a go. Well, we'll risk it. We'll risk it. You've got to be very careful with young lads with injuries, full stop anyway.
What do you make of Robin Van Persie? I was in Romania a week or two ago and the United fans after the game were very, very excited about Van Persie.
Quality. You come with that amount of money around your neck, that price tag, and sometimes people can get, oh, well, I don't have to start running around as much now. He's probably working harder now than he's ever worked. It's a good pro for me, that is, and I'll definitely get goals for United. And all the players will love playing with him.
How do you see him fitting in with Rooney? How do you see that partnership settling down?
No problem.
As a 9 and a 10, or, you know, United tend to play 4-2-3-1 now. How do you think it'll all settle down?
I think it's what the manager wants off Wayne. We're fortunate if he went in Wayne Rooney that he can play in numerous positions and he's good in them all. So it doesn't matter where he plays, he can support if he's in midfield. And if he's up front with Van Persie, he can drop off. They'll be okay. They'll even love their training sessions when they're training. They'll be doing tricks and what have you that, with one another. They'll just love it playing together.
Shinji Kagawa.
Yeah, he plays in a very difficult position.
Yeah.
And, could take a little bit longer for him to settle.
Mm.
It's a hard role to play where he is. It's just off the front, sometimes up, sometimes back. Very difficult. And, only certain players can do it.
The best, you've got to be a very good player to do it.
You have. It's a difficult role.
Yeah.
And sometimes the players can watch a game. You say, well, he's a bit quiet today. He'll come, no problem. He's okay.
And the midfield, there's been a diamond formation played in the last couple of games. What have you made of that? Tom Cleverley seems to be more involved now.
Well, up at Newcastle, they were brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I just sat back and enjoyed it. Kind of the opera of the world. Get a cigar out and watch this, enjoy it.
Yeah.
They were so good, first 25 minutes and then late on especially. Just a joy to watch, and it's just nice when you can go from one formation to another. And the outcome is good.
And you think he'll switch the formations according to the game? I spoke to Brian McClair at the start of the pre-season in Norway, and he just said the manager will just choose according to each game, either the formation or the team, and he's got the players to do it. He's got the squad big enough to adapt.
I think he will do that as well.
Hmm.
He's a top man anyway, he knows what he's doing. 25 years at Man United, gosh.
Yeah.
Need you say any more?
Best manager in British football ever?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I don't think anyone who's there now, who's in that premiership, wouldn't want to be kind of compared to him.
Yeah.
Because if you start being compared to him, you're going to find faults with yourself.
Yeah.
So, no, just hold your hand up and just say the best.
After the Stoke game at the weekend, United play Braga and then play Chelsea twice in 4 days. Is that going to be the toughest test of the season away in the league at Stamford Bridge?
Well, they did all right last year. They did, was it 3-0 down and 3-3?
Yeah.
That'll be a reminder to them that, A1, you don't give them 3 goals start, but 2, if we do go behind, we're more than capable of coming back. But they'll relish it. It's a big game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the big games and the big players play for Man United and they want the big games. And your Van Persie's and your Rooney's, all of them are big players and they'll relish it.
That game in February you talked about, I remember it, one, for being surprised it was on because there was a lot of snow in West London that day, and two, as a turning point for David De Gea. I can remember him missing a cross after 7 or 8 minutes. And for the first time, if I'm being honest, I started to doubt him because I'd seen a lot of him playing in Spain. I'd always rated him and I thought, maybe this is just is not going to work out. Yet by the end of the game, he was man of the match. He was absolutely brilliant. And that good form continued until the end of the season.
Yeah. Confidence again, you know.
Yeah.
You have a couple of knocks in the game and all of a sudden you kind of... your confidence goes and then and it's all about confidence. A couple of good saves and your confidence floods back, and especially the keepers. Mm. They make one mistake, you know, and they're punished.
Yeah.
It's... they get a bit of glory by saving the team and earning the result to be 3-3 and being a big part of it. Take it all and take all the plaudits.
I went to see the former Bayern Munich goalkeeper last week in Munich, Hans-Jürgen Butt. He was the lad who took all the penalties and he just retired. And I was talking to him about De Gea and Lindegaard and saying, what's it like for a young player at Manchester United? And he said, it's so difficult for De Gea. One, he's 21, 22. He's come from a different country. He said, as a goalkeeper, the hardest part is consistency and playing at the top level every 3 days. He said, it's so hard mentally. Even as an experienced goalkeeper, he found it difficult. So he thought it might not be a bad idea for United to have two goalkeepers and for De Gea to sort of move in step by step and eventually be the number one. But he also said the best teams in history have always had one goalkeeper.
Back fours get used to playing with one keeper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you keep changing goalkeepers, sometimes it can affect the back four, but... it seems to be the norm now and again, you know. I mean, I know sometimes it's probably used more in kind of the League Cup than the FA Cup rather than the league games. But if Sir Alex feels that way, he'll do right. He'll do right. He's seen these goalkeepers day in, day out. He's got a goalkeeping coach there that's keeping him informed. He'll be asking questions anyway. And he'll do the right thing, what's right for the lads and for Man United.
Yeah. Finally, predict the result of the game at Old Trafford on Saturday between two of your three teams.
I think it'll be a close game.
A close
That's
game.
All I'm saying. That's I think a. It'll be a close game.
That's a diplomatic answer.
Well, I think they're getting a little bit closer to like I said, good unfortunate result at Chelsea, good result against Liverpool, good result against Manchester City, their tails will be up, so I think it'll be a very close game.
So that's it for this episode of United We Stand. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, the new issue of United We Stand, issue 221, will be out against Stoke at Old Trafford on Saturday. You can also subscribe either by buying a digital edition or by getting an issue sent to you in the post. For more details, go to uwsonline.com. Until next week, goodbye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.